Welcome into this week's Cultural Breakdown. I'm Jack Wilkie, here to talk this week about immigration. I took a week off last week. I was on vacation for a couple days and came back just a little bit too late to get on for a live stream and talk about the latest. But this week we're going to take a look at immigration and where things stand with that as a major issue in the upcoming election, what Christians should think about it. We did an in-depth Think Deeper podcast episode on the matter a few months ago, and so if you want the hour-long version of that discussion, but I'm going to look at it as a little bit of a different focus here tonight with the issue of it becoming a single issue for voters, or for those that are single-issue voters. For so long, for many Christians, abortion was the single issue that took them to the polls, that especially in federal elections, whichever side a president was on, it was, that's what I'm going to vote for. And obviously that's a good thing. Since the overturning of Roe v. Wade by the Supreme Court a couple of years ago, that is now, it's still a very prominent issue. In fact, it's more important than ever at the state level, where laws can be changed and states can effectively outlaw abortion or greatly reduce access to it. And that's a great thing. And that should still be, I maintain, the number one priority. For years ago, it was gay marriage and things along those lines. Because of the courts, those things have been taken out of the voters' hands in so many cases, and so I do think that's something that won't be a single-issue voter kind of thing in itself, and so I think a lot of people are turning their focus toward immigration and saying, this is the issue of our day, this is the biggest challenge facing America. Of course, there are economic concerns, there's other things, but if you're going to be a single-issue voter, just maybe taking the pulse of Facebook, Twitter, looking around to see what people care about, what they're posting about, the memes that go around, things like that. This is a really big deal. And so the question is, should Christians do that? And which side should they come down on as we look at these things? And so I wanted to look at a couple headlines first. This was the AP, Associated Press. I always want to say Apologetics Press. They are also AP, but this is the big national news corporation. Associated Press. Many Christian voters in the U.S. see immigration as a crisis, and how to address it is where they differ. And we're going to get to that, of certain Christians see that it's an issue, but maybe we should keep them here. Others think they should go back, all of those things. But it is a very big deal. A lot of Christians see it as a crisis. Christianity Today was sharing stats from a Lifeway study that said many evangelicals have a negative perception of the recent number of immigrants to the United States. Half say they are a drain on economic resources. More than a third see the number as a threat to the safety of citizens and a threat to law and order, while 28% say they are a threat to traditional American customs and culture. Should we care about those things? That's something we're going to talk about as we go on in this as well. As some Christians look at that and say, that's incredibly selfish, that is incredibly earthly minded for Christians to think, well, we have a way of life here, we have an American culture that we need to preserve, and Christians shouldn't care about that. Others, obviously, a quarter of evangelicals do care about that and think it matters that the people are coming in. And when we talk about it, we're not talking about a few people trickling in. You've probably seen the numbers that in the last few years, something like what would be a top 10 states' population worth of illegal immigrants have come across the border. And so this is a big concern. There are so many people here, and we'll talk about some of the practical effects of that. And kind of how it has cascaded into so many parts of life. And so a lot of Christians, again, see this as an issue. And some are baffled and think we shouldn't care about this. Others say it's a problem, but our first instinct is to love them and kind of usher them into the good things this country does have to offer. This one I thought was interesting. Evangelicals want sermons on immigration. I think this was also from the Lifeway study. This is Sojourners.com that was publishing the findings about it and did a bit of a report, but I think it was 80% of Christians want to hear a sermon from their pulpit on immigration. That's incredible. That just as an aside from the immigration discussion here for a second, people care about stuff. People are going to vote based on these things. People turn on the news, they get on Facebook, they see the posts, they see memes, they see discussions. People are tuned in, they listen to the radio on the way to work or podcasts or whatever it may be generationally. And they're in touch with what's going on in the world, and they want their church to have answers as to, as a Christian, what should I think about this? So many times, and I talk about this a lot, that churches think, man, we got to distance ourselves from the political as much as is possible, and really just make it our thing to keep the peace. The number one political priority for churches is not to teach anything specific on these things, but just let everybody know, hey, wherever you are, we'll take everybody's opinions on this. That's not what people want. People are begging, please tell me what to do. Please tell me what I should think about this. I think there are some things we should think about it, and we're going to get to those Bible verses here in a minute. But I thought this was very interesting that they are looking to their church to say, tell me what God wants me to think about this. We've got to step up to the plate on that. I mean, 4 out of 5, you're hardly going to find any survey that gets 4 out of 5 people to agree on anything. And so for churchgoers to all want this, I thought was very telling. And so there's concerns on both sides. There's views about it on both sides. Of course, one of the main ones on, I guess, the more right-wing side is the safety issue of bringing in all of these extra people, not really vetting these people. It was very interesting a few years ago during all the COVID hysteria that there were people coming into the country who did not have to go through any of the restrictions put on other people for free movement and where they were going and things like that. But everybody else, well, you're making people unsafe by doing these things, but these people coming in, they don't have to do it, and it somehow isn't making people unsafe. So there's that, but there is the crime issue. There is things like that. There's the job issue, and it's a very real thing. We have a housing shortage. It's very hard to afford a house right now. Well, when you have an extra 10, 20, 30 million people in the country, things like that are a result of it, is there's just not enough place to put everyone. Places like California and the resources and the government programs that feed people and clothe people, care for people in different ways, healthcare, things like that, it's a weight on the system that people are concerned about. As you just saw, the 50% of evangelicals do believe they are a weight on the system. On the other hand, immigrants do a lot of jobs. That's one of the first things. Well, who's going to do these jobs? I think on the one hand, that's a solid argument because they do those things, and people that might not want to do certain jobs are going to have to step up and do them. On the other, I don't think that's the loving their neighbor take as much as people think it is by defending their right to be here by these jobs by saying, hey, we need this low-paid, low-class work, kind of almost slave labor class to come into our country or else it's going to collapse. That's not really a good thing. That's not the loving stance some people think it is. And so there's that concern. As far as the crime issue, of course, there's the infamous Donald Trump Jr. tweet from the 2016 election with the bowl of Skittles when they're talking about bringing in Syrian refugees from the conflict going on over there, and to say that, well, if just a few of them are dangerous, we have a problem. If out of the handful of or the bowl full of Skittles, if only 3 are going to kill you, would you still just go ahead and eat them? And of course, there was a lot of pushback on that. This was, I didn't screenshot it, but patheos.com had a number of blogs decrying that and talking about the Christian welcoming the immigrant verses we're going to talk about here in just a minute, but also what's written on the Statue of Liberty and that we're supposed to accept and take these people in. And of course, there's all the studies on, well, they're not really bringing in more crime than other places, but that's not really the point in that if just a few is what it takes. And you see things like just this last week, Rachel Morin, the mother of 5, very horrific story of what happened to her last year. Lake and Riley was a big name, or earlier this year, of another case such as this, someone killed by an illegal immigrant. And so people point to those cases and say, this is dangerous to our families. These are issues we're having. And you look over in Europe 10 years ago, there were all kinds of things about rape and crime and murder, things like that from the people they were bringing in from the Middle East. There is a danger to it, and that's the case being made on this side. On the other side, my good buddies over at the Christian Chronicle, of course, had the opinion piece of we're supposed to love our undocumented neighbor, and she did say, to her credit, I would never help somebody sneak in illegally. On the other hand, she talked about helping them get lawyers and basically find a path to citizenship while they're here, even though they are here illegally, and not confront them about that or tell them kind of the Onesimus thing in the book of Philemon. Hey, you do need to go home. As much as I love you, you can't be here. You're not supposed to be doing this. And so there's that take on it. This is a Christianity Today thing, of course, the love them as yourself, and we'll get to that verse as well. And so we do need to see that those verses on that side, then we'll see the case for the other side. Very simple. A lot of things in the Levitical law, a lot of things in Exodus and Deuteronomy about the foreigner, about the immigrant. Let's establish, number one, that does imply, not imply, that just it works under the assumption that there are people who are in the land and own the land, and there are foreigners, there are outsiders, there is the other, or whatever term like that. People don't like that term. It is part of the discussion here. There's you and your people that you were born to, your family, your tribe, whatever you want to call it, and people who are not part of that. There is that distinction, but among that distinction, he does say, "You shall not wrong a sojourner or oppress him, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt," Exodus 22:21. Deuteronomy 10:17-19 says, "For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, and the awesome God, who is not partial and takes no bribe. He executes justice for the fatherless and the widow, and loves the sojourner, giving him food and clothing. Love the sojourner, therefore, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt." It's important that they treat them that way and take care of them in that way. There are also plenty of other verses in the law talking about the same idea, but also that you're to treat them as one of your own, like to take them in. But treat them as one of your own is saying something in itself, that they are not one of your own, but you are to treat them kindly, even though they aren't your own. Galatians 3:28, of course, in the New Testament, there is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is no male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. And so, there, especially as Christians, we lose those distinctions. Notice this is in the church. This is in Christ Jesus. This is not that there's no ethnicities, nations, anything like that anymore. But some people would say when you're a Christian, you lose that identity and you don't identify as an American. You're a Christian. And so you don't think I'm an American and somebody else is from another country. You see people differently. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Hebrews 13, verse 14, and there's a couple of things like this in Hebrews that talk about we're looking heavenward. We have here no lasting city, but we seek the city that is to come. And then when it talked about Abraham, and he was seeking for the city whose foundations and builder was, had foundations, its builder was God. It says in Hebrews 11, 13 through 16, "These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city." A lot in there about Christians not putting down our roots too deeply here on earth, of realizing we are from elsewhere, we're strangers and exiles on earth. This, as we sing, "This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through." There is that sense in there, and so a lot of Christians will make the case for that to say, why do we care about somebody being an immigrant to this land? We're not identifying with this land in the way that we're talking about here either. And so there is that side of it. On the other hand, and you might have guessed that because I put this second, this is the side I side with more, and there's answers to those things. The fact that we do need to treat them well is a big part of it. Mistreating them, speaking harshly to them, not caring for them when we're around them is not something that we're supposed to do. I mean, that's just very clear from all that. That doesn't mean the Christian's job is to just say, throw the doors open, anybody come in, as many people as you want, and let's just see how many this country can fit. That is not the biblical case. In Revelation 21, I think it's very interesting that even as it's describing the beautiful city of God that comes down out of heaven, it says, "The city has no need of sun or moon to shine on it, for the glory of the Lord, or glory of God, gives it light, and its lamp is the Lamb. By its light will the nations walk, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. And its gates will never be shut by day, and there will be no night there. They will bring into it the glory and the honor of the nations." Nations isn't necessarily just countries and borders like we have it today, but ethnoi, people groups, peoples from around the world. That's a factor even at this culmination of God's plan of kings bringing the glory of their nation. And so there's still a separation. There's a recognition that this guy's the king of this group of people, and this group of people is coming in, and they've got their own glory and honor among their group of people that they are all bringing before the throne of Christ. And so, yeah, we're all one in Jesus, but when it says it's neither Jew nor Greek, it's the same sleight of hand people do with male nor female on that verse to say, well, there's no male nor female, so we don't need to distinguish who gets to preach and who gets to be an elder. It's not saying everything, all the distinctions were erased. It's saying nobody's more important than anybody else in Christ. But you are still Jew or Gentile. You are still American or Russian or Mexican or Kenyan or whatever it may be. You're still those things here on earth. But as it's indicating here, you might go into heaven as those things, as I'm a Wilkie, you know, like there's meaning to that in the same sense of you're an American. That's where you're born. This is your people. This is the roots that you have here on earth do matter. They're a part of who you are and who God made you to be. Romans 9:3, Paul bears this out when he said, I wish that I myself were accursed and cut off from Christ for the sake of my brothers, my kinsmen according to the flesh. He's speaking specifically about the Jewish people whom he identified with. In Philippians 3, he called himself a Hebrew of Hebrews, that the tribe of Benjamin. Those things matter to him. He didn't say, you know, he said, I count them as loss, and that they're not his resume. He's not patting himself on the back over it, but he says, I am these things. He didn't say, I was a Benjamite. He is a Benjamite. He's just saying it doesn't matter more than his identity in Christ. And so here he's saying, I am a Jew, and I love these people. I have this priority, this longing for my brothers, my kinsmen according to the flesh. That's a concept that has really been lost on a lot of American Christians, that it's okay to have that. And the question it brings up is, was Babel a curse? And I think when you get into David Lipscomb's stuff, when you talk about nations and Christian identity and things like that, a lot of people look all the way back to the Tower of Babel and say, the only reason we have nations is because of sin, is because God scattered all the people. And so the nations exist almost in rebellion to God, and when things are made right, that'll all be done away with and everybody will be brought together. I don't think that's correct. When the reason God gave them different languages was so they would scatter, because what had Noah and his family, what were they told when they came off the ark? Be fruitful and multiply, replenish the earth, fill the earth, go. Essentially, go and fill the earth, and they didn't. They all wanted to gather in one place and make themselves formidable against God and build a tower up to the heavens and everything they were trying to do. And so to confuse his language, it says three times in the passage there, I'm going to scatter them. I want to send them throughout the earth. Basically, you're not doing it, so I'll do it for you. I'll make sure that this happens, and I'm going to send these peoples all around the world, which is a great thing. You go to the book of Acts in chapter 2, where the Pentecost happens, it's people of all these nations or Jews from all these nations coming back together and hearing the word in their own language, and it's kind of a reversal of Babel, but they all eventually go back to their homes. They all eventually, and the gospel goes out to the nations. People are people. Paul goes out saying, I'm a Jew, but I'm also a Roman citizen, and he appeals to that Roman citizenship. And so he views himself as a person who lives on earth and is really rooted and grounded here, as well as being a Christian too. And it's okay for Christians to do that. And so the idea that we're all one, exactly the same, there should not be any borders to the Christian, and in a perfect world, nobody would care about any of these things, it's just not reality. It's not how humans work. If I see somebody in a Denver Broncos t-shirt, I like the guy. I feel a camaraderie there. In fact, in the gym, I was wearing a Colorado Avalanche t-shirt. That's where I grew up. I live 1,000 miles from there now. Another guy came up and said, I grew up in Colorado. We grew up, you know, 20 miles apart, rooting for the same teams. We had a shared identity there. This is reality. We don't need to deny reality and say, well, we don't care about these things. But here to me is the interesting part about this, as far as a Christian and loving your neighbor and those verses that come into this. I think both sides believe they're loving their neighbor. I looked at the crime thing, the jobs thing, the housing thing, all the things that are used against immigration. It's because you love the people around you and you say, this is bad for them. It's bad for my kids. It's bad for my wife. It's bad for my family and my fellow church members and my fellow citizens here and where I live, to keep bringing people on and throwing people on and on the welfare state and all of the things that are being done. This isn't a healthy thing. And so it's something we should stop. It's something maybe we should send a lot of them back. Of course, the other side thinks we're loving our neighbor by they're coming from bad countries. They're coming from a lesser standard of living. We've got it better here. And so we'll bring them in and give them that. But it's really in the same sense of I'm a dad. There might be kids around the neighborhood who don't have, you know, they're not growing up with much. I'd love to be able to help them. But there's a limit to how many people I can help. And with each one, I get closer to not being able to help my own kids, not being able to protect my own kids. And I have a duty to my own kids first. And so when we talk about loving our neighbor, that could be everybody, or that could start in rippling circles from those under your own roof, those of your own blood, and your kind of your bigger family, your family reunion kind of family, your church family, again, people in your local town, that you have this care for them, and you care for everybody. Because this is a study that was done, and of kind of the love that people have for the people around them, for people in different places and such things as that. And conservative people, the heat maps you see there are kind of your close to home. And in the description there, you might be able to read, it's kind of small font. It starts as those ripples, your immediate family, extended family, closest friends, all of your acquaintances, all the people you've ever met. And it just goes all the way out to the end of, by the end of it, it's animals, it's all maybe potential alien life forms, it's trees and plants, anything living in the universe, the natural universe itself. It just goes farther and farther out from the ripple rings that start at the center with you and your family. Conservative-leaning people have the most love towards the people closest to them. The family, the neighbor, the friend, maybe the church family, whatever it may be. Liberal people have the most love for people really far away from them. People they've never met. People, fellow citizens of their country, but people that live in this hemisphere or our continent or whatever. That's kind of a problem. That is a very cheap love your neighbor as yourself, where you don't actually have to love somebody. And you saw this happen last year, where there was so much pro-immigration, let them in, cities of refuge, New York City saying, we think they should be let in. And so Texas said, okay, here you go, and bust them up to New York. And immediately the mayor of New York started saying, we got a problem. We can't do all these people. When it was far from home, they had all the love in the world for them. When it came to their doorstep, they said, well, hold on. It was these heat maps. And so I think a lot of Christians talk a really good game about this. And some of them even do these kinds of things, but not all of them, and maybe not many of them. Open up your own house. It's free to go find somebody. You know, as a husband with kids, it is unthinkable to me that I would risk my own family, or even economically things are pretty tight, even limit our resources by bringing somebody else in. But boy, I could pat myself on the back and just say, you know what, I'm going to vote for them to come in and make it somebody else's problem. Close to home love is a really important thing, and that's where the rubber really meets the road. And I loved this bit from a Dostoevsky book, The Brothers Karamazov. He's this guy, I believe he's a doctor, and he was saying, I love people so much, I'm overwhelmed by it, but not when they get close to me. He said, in actual fact, however, I cannot bear to spend 2 days in the same room with another person. I become a man's enemy as soon as he touches me. But to make up for it, the more I hate individual people, the more ardent is my general love for mankind. I think when a lot of Christians do the love your neighbor thing about immigration in general, about the millions of people we're talking about coming over this border illegally, it's a love that costs them nothing. It is this kind of thing. It's a love for mankind, but the people immediately closest to you, this is going to hurt them. This is going to make life harder for them. And there's a really interesting book called The Age of Entitlement by Christopher Caldwell, where he basically goes over how everything in the last 60 years has degraded and where we've gotten ourselves as a culture. But one of the things he talks about is immigration and how the standard of living is brought down by we shipped jobs overseas, we shipped manufacturing overseas, we brought people in to do other jobs. And when you talk about, man, it's really hard to have a stay-at-home mom, for the wife to stay home and take care of the kids, you need the two incomes. It's almost directly correlated to things like this, to the standard of living going down because of all these extra people we've brought in, thinking, well, we can help them, but there's a cost. And there's a really cheap emotional, again, the same thing he's talking about, that Dostoevsky is talking about here, loving everybody, and you can really feel good about yourself, but you don't weigh the costs of these things. And it's the easy answer, well, should we help people? Yes. But when you think of the second level and the third level effects and who it might hurt or 50 years down the line what it's going to cause, you have to bring those considerations in. Well, a lot of people aren't ready for that. A lot of people like the emotional high it gives them to be the good guy who doesn't say no, to be the good guy who is against sending people out of the country, that it's not very Christian to say, well, we're going to send them back home and we're going to close, very much limit immigration and not let people in, that, boy, building a wall is not what Jesus would do. He created the nations at Babel. Number one, he wants you to love your neighbor, which is the person nearest to you. And one of the most unchristlike things you could do is to sell out your neighbor for an unseen person so you can pat yourself on the back and not really have anything to do with it. And so I don't have respect for kind of the emotional manipulation that's there. And just to put the icing on the cake, in Deuteronomy 28, we read all those things in the Levitical law about the loving the foreigner and the sojourner among you. That's very true. But he also gives this as one of the curses in Deuteronomy when he says, when you don't obey me, here's why it's going to go bad and here's what you're going to endure. It says, the sojourner who is among you shall rise higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower. He shall lend to you, and you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. All these curses shall come upon you, and pursue you, and overtake you till you are destroyed, because you did not obey the voice of the Lord your God, to keep his commandments and his statutes that he commanded you. One of the curses, when they don't obey God, is that the sojourner is going to come in, rule over them, not share, not lend to them. He's going to take advantage of them. It's not good. And so this is a curse on a people when these kinds of things come to pass. And so as we talk about this, the key takeaways, immigration is going to be a big election factor. It just is. For Christians, it might be a single issue voting thing. For a lot of people, it's going to be priority number one. And it's hard to blame them because of the size of this issue. So the Bible does say, love the immigrant. Do not treat people poorly. Love the people around you, whoever God places before you. But third, loving them does not demand unlimited immigration. As a Christian, you can say, no, I'd be okay with closing the border. I'd be okay with sending people out because they're here illegally. The law says they're not supposed to be. We should send them back. It's okay to do that. And it's okay to prioritize your closest neighbors. It is not bigotry. It's not hatred. Again, it's loving the people that you have the opportunity to affect with your love. Not loving a nameless, faceless person to feel good about yourself. But it is love where you have skin in the game. It really matters. And so it's a nuanced issue, and this is the real frustration I have on a lot of things in this day and age, is nuance and depth doesn't matter. The emotional answer is the first one everybody wants to run to, the one that makes us feel good about ourselves, not really considering any of the trappings, any of the things that go along with the issue, not really considering the effect it has on people. And I don't know, I could rant on this for days about this critical theory world we live in where the oppressed person is always right no matter what. It doesn't work that way. That's not necessarily true. There is truth that we have to deal with beyond a sob story, beyond the things that make us feel good and warm and fuzzy inside, about truths and harsh realities of what happens when a country doesn't get this right. And it's okay to want government to take care of its people, to punish lawlessness. One of those things is entering a country illegally. And to do the things that God told them or they're supposed to do in Romans 13 and 1 Peter and be what they're commanded to be. And so as this becomes a bigger issue for Christians, you might not get a sermon from the pulpit as again, 80% want to hear that. I wanted to have this here on Cultural Breakdown. I wanted this to be part of our discussion, one of the things I tackled, because it matters so much to so many people. And so, yeah, that's where I'm going to leave it. I think I've said what I need to say. If you have any questions, comments, here on YouTube, I'm going to post this also to my site, jackwilkie.co. Check that out. You can leave a comment there, wherever you might want to reach me. If you have a suggestion, that is one of the hard things about this, is week after week coming up with a new suggestion, something new in the news or whatever it may be, please send it my way, and I will be happy to take a look at whatever you give me, and I will talk to you guys next week on Cultural Breakdown.